some accounts you can use. For the distribution of the accounts, we need some numbers. So please, everyone who wants to follow my instructions live on this computer, please count a number. We will start with okay. Who is number one? Okay, so you're number one. Well, who is number two? Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Okay, eight is nine. Okay, so you have your number. So your username will be guest and your number. So, for example, guest 03. Please don't forget seeding 0. So you're 1, then your username is guest 01. And the password is the same. Yeah? So this is your user account to Coke's Workbench. And then you can go here to this website. So the correct address is ubuntu.com/bc2016/. Then you'll be redirected to this website here. Then you have all the information on the tutorial. As you see here, I have six activities, so six things you can try. And we'll do now the first one, which is Opus Analysis with CPP Web. And here you have the links to the Opus interface. So if you want to work with the English version, then you can here click on Text and Dev Corpus Alpine Journal. And you will come to this website here, where you can enter your account details, username and password. Come to this website, then it will look like this. And up here you can enter your username and your password and login. Okay. We will do that together afterwards, but first I give you some information about the Corpus you're working with. So the Corpus is, as I already said, a Corpus about engineering. Text and Berg is the name of this Corpus in German. We had these books. So the Swiss Alpine Club started its existence in the year of 1864. And each year they published a book about reports on mountaineering. So you have 150 years of reports about mountaineering. And you see books like this with photos and drawings of mountains and of course the texts. And he compiled this corpus out of 302 volumes of yearbooks, and we have data from the Swiss Alpine Club from 1864 until today. And we have data from the British Alpine Club, because the British Alpine Club is a very, very important Club the Alps. They were the first ones who discovered all or climbed the big mountains. And the Swiss people, they learned a lot from the Britons and also started their club. And we have data from 1969 until 2008 from the Christian High Club. The corpus is about 50 million words tall, and we have texts in German, French, Italian, Romansh, and for the Shopline Club English. Parts of the corpus is translated, so we were able to build a parallel corpus where you have really aligned the different language versions of the same text. So you have the text in German and you have aligned French translation, and you can do some studies to see how specific expressions are translated into the other language. And this was only for part of the corpus, because this has been done only in some time periods. Yeah, of course, it's a collaborative work together with the computational linguists in Zurich. Let me compile this corpus. Okay, so now let's exercise. Okay, I switch to this interface. So you can also enter directly this URL here. So secretlyweb.linguistic.etc.h. You enter here your username. I enter guest40. Guest40, the same as password. So. And then I choose here the Alpine Journal, English version, and then you should come up with a view like this, where you have the main query interface to the corpus. So the software behind is Corpus Workbench, which is open source software freely available. And to be precise, you have the component of the software itself, which has no graphical user interface, but runs on a server. You can install this software locally on your computer, but also on a server if you want to collaborate with other people. And then there is a graphical user interface with the name CQP Rep, which interacts with this Corpus Workbench. And the graphical user interface is very convenient to work with. It uses a special query language named CQP for a corpus query protocol. And this CQP syntax is also used in other concordance software. So it could be, if you're working with another software, that you can also use this CQP language to work with the data. I come to back to that later. First, if you just start here at the interface, then the build mode used is the simple build mode, where you just can enter any word or expression and start a query, and then you get keyword in context view, where you have all of these matches of mountain. So we have 10,000 over 10,000 matches.
Corpus. You see that the whole corpus has 6 million words, word forms. And yeah, you have here the keyword in context view. You can have the details on the text with the metadata annotated here. So here you have the year in which book it appeared. In the English corpus, we sometimes do not have a lot of metadata. In the German one, we have more metadata. You can, of course, also get to more context and see here the further context of this match mountain. Okay, now we have only searched for exact this word form mountain. So we would not find any plural form of mountains. Now, as this corpus is annotated with part of speech information, we have possibilities to use this annotation, but then we have to choose this query mode CQP and use a specific syntax to formulate the queries. So now I have to see if I can find the right things here on this laptop. Okay. So in this corpus we have the word form level. Yeah. Then we have the words originally appeared, how they appeared in the corpus. Then on a second level we have part of speech information. So each token has a part of speech information which it belongs to, the word class. And then as a third level we have the lemmatized version of the word. So and all these levels I can activate all these levels or search on these levels if I state which level I want to search with. So if I write here lemma equal mountain in this square brackets, then I say okay, now I search the lemma mountain in all the flexion forms. Okay, I make it a bit bigger, perhaps. So. Okay, if I then start the query, we see here that now we also have the plural form mountains found, and not only the singular. Okay? Did that work? So important is here, you use always these brackets. The brackets say this is an entity, this is a word. And I say I want to search on the lemma level for mountain. And very important, you in the query mode menu here, you have to say that you're using CQP syntax for that it works. Okay. Now we can also use the part of speech level to search. And let's say we're interested in the adjectives appearing together with mountain, yeah? Then we say, okay, before the lemma, we have part of speech for adjective, and in this tag set here, the code for adjectives is JJ. So basically here we say, okay, we search for an expression where we have an adjective followed by a lemma mountain. Yeah? Yeah. I wait a moment for everyone to follow. Okay, so let's start this query and see what happens. Okay, Now you see we have a lot of matches, small mountain, single mountain, high mountain, wonderful mountain, overseas mountain, teeniest mountain, local mountains, etc., etc. Now it's not so interesting to scroll down all this keyword list or this quick list, but we want to have kind of a summarization of this result. Yeah? We wanted to see which adjectives how often appear together with mountain. Therefore, we can use here this menu where you have the entry new query. And here you have a lot of options what you can do with the with the search result. And what we are interested in now is to have a so-called frequency breakdown. So we want to summarize the search result to get the frequencies of the different matches. Yeah? So we choose here frequency breakdown. And then click on go. And now we have a list here where we see that high mountains is the most frequent expression with 183 occurrences. That is, they make 6% of all the results. Yeah. Then high mountain in singular form. Then we have here something strange, acute mountain. What does this mean? We can just click on this expression here and then get all the matches for this word combination, acute mountain. And we see it is the acute mountain sickness. Yeah. Probably in all cases. So, that means mountains normally are high, they're great, they're big. Of course, there are other mountains. First, many, beautiful, etc., etc. You see here the occurrences, the frequencies, that there are very few examples with high frequencies, followed by a very long tail of frequencies with expressions with low frequencies, and this describes more or less the classical Zipf curve. If you have already come across the Zipf curve, which states that in natural language you normally have, if you count things, if you count words, the appearance of words or expressions, you normally have very few expressions occurring very frequently, and that decreases very, very fast, and then you have a long tail of expressions with very low, low frequencies. Yeah? And you see a similar curve here, that we have only a few expressions with high occurrences, and then a lot. You can here slide to the pages. A lot of expressions appearing only four times in the whole corpus, or if we go to the end, only once in the corpus. Yeah. So if you're interested in very rare expressions, how you could describe a mountain, then you should have a look at the tail of this frequency list. If you're interested in the very frequent expressions used, then you're interested in the start of the list. Okay, did that work for everyone, more or less? Yeah. Okay, now you can, in defining here your search queries, you can mix whatever you want. You can also say that, for example, in between these two words, there may be another word, if you use the star. So you can say, okay, between this adjective and the mountain, there can be other words, but also nothing. You can say, there can be one word or nothing, etc. So you have you can also use brackets and you can use Boolean expressions, etc., etc. And I have in the tutorial in the website on the web page, I gave you you have more information about that, about more search expressions you can use. And you can also, in this corpus, we have also annotated, for example, mountain names. So in this corpus, we have an annotation called mountain, where I can say, okay, I want to search for tokens annotated as being a mountain name. Then it looks like this. And if you do that, you just get words where our computer program thought this must be a mountain name. And if you then do a frequency breakdown, you get a list of the most frequent mountain names appearing in this corpus. So the Himalaya is in this corpus, the most frequent one, followed by Mont Blanc, Kanchenjunga, etc. You will also come across some errors where the computer program made an error annotating the mountain names. And of course, you then you can also mix this expression here, searching for a mountain name, with all the other expressions. So for example, an adjective preceding a mountain name, whatever. So a lot of possibilities.
Yeah. So
first you need to know something about the annotation of the corpus. And in this corpus, you have here a corpus documentation. There you can read that you can see that we have mountain names, mountain cabins, etc., annotated in the corpus. And if this is the case, then you just use this XML expression, kind of XML expression, to say, okay, I want a part of the corpus which is annotated as mountain. And the idea here is that we say, okay, we have this annotation of mountain, and in between there are of course words which are these mountain names, and sometimes this is just one word. Yeah, but sometimes a mountain name can be composed of more than one word. So therefore, we need this plus here to say, okay, the expression can be one or several words, all annotated as being a mountain.
And as I understand, JJ means adjective, yes?
Yes. Yeah. And this information you have here in corpus info, Pendry Tree Bank. So if you click on this link, then you get the documentation about the tag set. So here you have a very in-depth documentation about all the word classes used in this tag set, with information in which cases this word class has been applied to. and here you find the abbreviations for the word classes. So if you're working with a corpus you don't know, then first you have to get all the information you have, you can get on this corpus to know how it is annotated, with which tag set has been used, etc., to be able to really use it. Okay, I just want to show you some other possibilities in the corpus. So let's do again basic search for lemma equal mountain. So for the lemma mountain, you then have here in this new new query, you have several possibilities. You have the possibility to calculate collocations. So you just choose here collocations, you then say what window do you want to have to calculate the collocations. So in what distance the words together appearing with your keyword should be considered. So we leave that at 5, and then we can calculate the collocation database. That takes a moment. And now we get here a list of the words co-occurring significantly often together with mountain. you have possibilities here to tweak the list a bit. So we have here now the window from 3 words left to 3 words right. We can increase that to 5 as we wanted at the beginning. And submit again, and then the list should look slightly different. So the is obviously the most significant word together, coming together with mountain. Off, sickness, highest, high, ranges, world, laugh, interesting, yeah? And you see here, you have here all the information. So the list is ranked by this statistical value of significance, which is here log likelihood test of significance. And you have also here the raw frequencies of this combination, so the observed collocate frequency. And you see, for example, that laugh appears only 148 times together with mountain, but is more significant as, for example, in, which appears more often, of course, but as the frequency of in with all other words in the corpus is also very high, then it's not very surprising that it also appears often together with mountain. But laugh, on the other hand, appears in the corpus lonely not so often than in, and if it appears, then obviously relatively often together with mountain, therefore it is quite significant. Yeah? And if you click here on the observed collocation frequency number, then you get all the matches of laugh appearing together with mountain. So this is a way to get kind of a semantic profile of a specific word. Here, of course, based on a very specific corpus about mountaineering, so you would here learn something about the semantics of the word in the context of mountaineering, of course. Okay, any questions so far, problems? Yeah. We have time also afterwards. I will not leaving today. Yeah? I'm here also the next few days, so you can always come to me and come with a problem, and I can show you a solution, hopefully, to your problem. That's no problem. Okay, so this was the calculation of collocations. I just want to give you a very brief overview on the other functions, namely distribution. We already talked about that. So how these matches of mountain distribute over a specific metadata we have in the corpus. You see here in the categories what metadata we have. So this also obviously differs from corpus to corpus what you have, but you see how important it is if you build your own corpus to really think on good metadata, to really collect all metadata you can have, which makes sense for your research afterwards. You need to collect and to integrate into corpus, because afterwards you can use this metadata to structure your result sets accordingly. So, for example, we can here use the metadata decade and get a distribution table where we can see how the frequency of mountain distributes over time, measured in decades. You have, of course, here the raw frequencies, the raw hits, which are difficult because, of course, you don't know how big each subcorpus in each decade is. So you have to use a relative value. Here you have, in this column, you have the frequency per million words in category. So as a relative value, where you really can compare and see that obviously in the 1960s we have a bit less occurrences of mountain in the corpus than afterwards. Mountain would be here, is here not a very interesting example because we wouldn't expect that the use of the word mountain differs over time in this corpus. But if you choose something else, for example freedom, love, maybe you would see some differences. Okay, another thing you can do is the calculation of keywords, where you can first define a subcorpus in your corpus. Let's say you want all texts from a specific time period and another subcorpus, and then compare these two subcorpora to calculate which words are typical for the first one compared to the other one. You find on the website, you find a tutorial how to do that. I won't show that now in detail. So this is more or less what you can do with the corpus workbench. and similar concordance software. Yeah? Corpus workbench is not the only one. You have with the Georgian National Corpus, you have an own search interface which works similarly. There's also a concordance software I really like named TXM, which is a French concordance software from Lyon. I have also listed it on the website where you can find the information about this concordance software, where you can also easily import your own corpus and work with. Okay. So this is the first demonstration with the corpus workbench. A second demonstration I won't give. No, I won't present that now. This is working with the GraphCall software to calculate collocations and visualize them as a network. You find also a step-by-step tutorial on the website on that, and you can easily try out that yourselves. You just need a known corpus, basically text files. And you can import these text files into the software and then visualize these collocation networks and also test the different measures, statistical measures. There is a very good documentation to this software, so I have no doubt that you will find out yourselves how it works. Okay. Now, I've told a lot about analyzing existing corpora, and I wanted to give you now some insights how, or considerations how to build your own corpus in theory and also practically. If you want to build your own corpus, then you have to consider some questions if it is useful to do that. First of all, you need to know what language you want to analyze, and here I mean not language in the sense of Georgian or English or German or whatever, but what kind of language do you want to analyze? Do you want to analyze written texts, written newspaper texts? Are you interested in spoken language, in specific spoken language, etc.? Then the question is, what texts do you need that represent this language? Yeah? If you're interested in love letters, then of course you need love letters to do that. If you're interested in discourses, in political discourses, for example, in a country, then the question is not so easy to answer. Which texts are representing this discourse. Would you say that political discourse is represented by mass media newspaper articles? What about television and radio? What about blogs, etc.? So here you have to get a clear picture on what texts do you want to have that are representing this section of language you want to analyze. And then normally you have this theoretical collection of texts. So if you're interested in a political discourse, then you would say, okay, I'll focus on mass media discourse. Yeah? I'm not interested in the informal talks of people in the restaurant about this topic, but I'm only interested in mass media. But then you would say, okay, which newspapers do you need, which online sources, which radio and TV stations, etc. And then normally it's clear that you can't collect all this data, so you need to get a sample which represents this theoretical section of language use. So what sample of text representing this language can be collected? And then, of course, it is also important to know how you want to examine the text data. So are the metadata important for you? Which metadata is important for you for your research? Which annotations do you need? Is it enough to have a token annotation of part of speech tags, for example, or are you interested in syntactic structures of some grammatical phenomena? Then, of course, you need some parsers to annotate this information. Or are you interested in specific semantic classes, and do you need some kind of semantic annotation to the corpus? So it's very important to have a clear picture how the text data has to be annotated for being able to answer research questions. So what kind of annotations are needed? And then, of course, you have to choose a data management platform. I showed you this Corpus Workbench database. So is that enough for your research? Or do you need another kind of management platform to work with? Okay, so these are these important questions you have to consider before beginning to compile a corpus. I want just to stress how important specialized corpora are. Often in corpus linguistics, it is one aim to build this big national corpora representing a whole language. And of course, this is an important goal. But often, for your specific research question, you are not so interested in this big corpora, but want a really specialized corpus which suits your needs if you have a very specific question. Yeah? Then it is much more useful if you have a very specific corpus which deals only with a specific text type, for example, on a specific topic, and there to have enough material, enough text to really do profound research on this data. This is often more useful than work with a big corpus representing a lot of different text types if you, in the end, do not have enough material for your specific research question. No? Of course, it is often useful to compare your specialized corpus with a general corpus. If you have, for example, a corpus representing a political discourse, and you see that the semantics of a specific expression behaves like this and that in your specialized corpus, then it is interesting to compare this word profile, this semantics, in a general purpose corpus, to see the differences and to see, okay, in my corpus, for example, the word freedom has another meaning than it has normally in the general language corpus. So here it is very interesting to compare these corpora. Okay, what I have here, I think it's just a bit more detailed what I've already summarized yet, and I will skip that because I think you got the general idea what I wanted to say about specific corpora. Yeah. Okay. Now, if you have considered all these questions and you're really clear about the data you need and the annotations you need, then let's start with making the hand dirty, making the hands dirty, and turning text into a corpus. So in our case, with the mountaineering corpus, we had really these books. And had the aim to turn these books into digital data. How can that be done? What we needed to do is kind of pre-processing, scanning. We had to cut the books and put them into a scanner to scan all the pages. Then we did some OCR, optical character recognition, to recognize the text. Of course, these pre-processing steps differ greatly depending on the data you have. If you're already working with digital data, if you're downloading, for example, web data, then of course your pre-processing steps look very different from these here. Then you're not at the end if you've just the data in a digital format, but you then have to bring it in a useful format where all these different softwares can work with afterwards. And what that is normally XML. We normally deal with three different data types, namely unstructured data, semi-structured, and structured data. What does it mean? Unstructured data is when if you have digital text, but without any real metadata in a structured format. You just have, for example, a Word file where you have all the text, and you have perhaps you have always a title of each document, which is a bit bigger than the rest of the text and in bold, and you have an author and you have a date, but in a format where a computer has no chance to really see what it is. Yeah? Semi-structured data is text in XML or HTML format, and I will show you, I give you examples afterwards. And structured data is text which is already in databases. So unstructured data, yeah, something like this. Also in the scanned version, it is just text, but the computer does not know where the title is, who the author is, that this little mark at the right corner is the page numeration. Yeah. And you have from OCR software, for example, this example where you just get a text with some layout information, but no more structured information. This here is an example of semi-structured data, and this is XML. I think some of you are already familiar with XML data. So if you know HTML websites, then you know basically what XML is. And here, obviously, you have a very different situation because here you have the entry TOC entry, for example, where you have attributes stating who the author is. The author has an idea, there's a category, etc. So every information which is in the text has an annotation which says something about the type of this information you have here. And this is very important to have digital text in such a format that computers can do something with it afterwards. So here you have a more simple example of XML, and you see we have a corpus element saying that you have always a start element corpus and an end element. So we know that everything inside here belongs to this corpus. Then we have here an element saying here starts an article, yeah, and here we have the end of this article, so everything in between is one article, and you see here starts another article. This element article has an attribute ID, which is an identical number describing this article. Then you have a section here, metadata, so everything in between here is metadata about the text. So we have a title, we have an author, and here we have text. Yeah. This is a semi-structured data, and it can have a completely different form. You can name these elements however you want, whatever you want. It doesn't matter, but one document is consistent in terms of that the elements are used always the same way. Here's another example where it is a bit more simple, a flat XML format where we have only this article element and the metadata as attributes in this article element. You have the ID, the title, and the author here, and then here the text. So also this is a valid XML format you can use. XML, here's some information about XML. If you're not very familiar with XML, XML stands for Extensible Markup Language. And the interesting thing is that you have kind of a meta language describing your XML schema. Yeah, you have kind of a grammar saying what elements elements you're using in your XML format and where they may appear in the document. And this meta language, this grammar, is called DTD, document type definition, or XML schema, which, as it says here, defines the elements and their positions in the hierarchy. If you structure your documents in XML, you can always check if they're well-formed, meaning that the documents are consistent with the general XML rules, which apply for all XML documents. And the most important rules are that there must be one root element, so one element which is the top of the hierarchy, and that all elements have a begin and an end tag, and that the elements are properly nested, etc. And you can check if the document is valid, meaning that the document, the application of the elements are consistent with the rules, with the grammar you have defined in the DTD or the schema. And that this is very important if you have a big project where a lot of people produce a lot of XML documents, then you can really publish your DTD, your schema, and say, okay, you have to check your XML document if it is valid, if it is consistent with this rule, and if this is the case, then we're sure that your XML document is well-formed and valid and is consistent with all the XML other XML elements we have in the project. And if not, then you see, okay, there must be an error, and you just can correct it to get it valid. Yeah, as I said, you can invent your own XML format, and sometimes it's quite useful to do that. If you do so, then you have to do, or it's advisable to really find a generic format which is not only suitable for this very specific document, but for a lot of documents you're dealing with. And On the other hand, often it is useful to use XML standards, but because of course there are standards, because there are a lot of other people building corpora, and so there are a lot of standards. And one very important standard is the TEI, Text Encoding Initiative Standard, which tries to give an XML standard suitable for all kinds of texts. And also transcribed text, so for spoken language, all different text types to be able to format every possible text. This TEI standard is sometimes a bit complicated. There are simple forms of this standard which are quite useful usable. I think it's a good advice to see if in your corpus project it is useful to use this standard to find a good solution which helps also, which is sustainable. That is the idea, that if you prepare a collection of texts, that not only you can work with this data, but you can also hand over this data to someone else who can do something with it. And if it is in a TEI standard, then it is very likely that other people can work with it without any problems. There's another standard, XCES, a corpus encoding standard for XML, which is similar to TEI. If you have your documents in XML format, you can also transform this format automatically in other formats. You can write rules, transformation rules, which can be applied to any XML document to transform its structure in another structure. So normally it's not really a big deal to transform your own XML format automatically into, for example, a TEI format. And this is the big advantage of XML, that you can always transform it in other XML formats. Yeah, include as much metadata as possible. I think this is clear. This here is part of TEI XML document, just to give you an impression how this looks like. So you see it's not very complicated. You have a header section here saying something about the file. You have a title statement where you have a title and author information. You have a publication statement with some publication and information and information about the source. And then you have here the actual text beginning. No. Okay, so another activity I have prepared, but we won't do that now. It's just if you're interested in that, is you can experiment a bit with this XML standard TEI. I have prepared here a template named All XML. The nice thing about XML is that you don't need necessarily any specific software to work with this XML data. You can use just a normal text editor capable opening a text file and work with this XML file. So you don't need any specific XML software. Of course, there is specific XML softwares, XML editors, which help you to write these XML files. They offer, for example, tests of validity and well-formedness, so you can see if your document is valid and well-formed or not. But you don't need that. And you have on the website, you have some information how you can just use this All XML template, open it in a text editor software, and then fill in your information. You can open an XML document in a browser, and normally a browser just represents then the structure of the XML document without any graphical formatting. And if the browser opens this document, then it is also well formed, and you have already done this check. Okay, so how much time we have? Half an hour, okay. Then, okay, yeah, then I will show you for the remaining time a possibility to easily download data from the web. Of course, in web we have a lot of digital texts we can use to build a corpus. Normally it's very convenient because it is already digital, and you also have some metadata in the text, because normally texts in the web are in HTML, and in HTML this is a semi-structured format, so we can try to kind of analyze the structure of the HTML to get metadata, for example, to see which element is a title, which element is a author name, etc., etc. You can download websites very easily with standard tools you have normally on a Unix computer or on a Mac. There are standard tools where you can download any HTML website. These tools are, for example, wget and curl. And I have also on my website some information how you can do that. But there's a very interesting service at the moment. They started 2 years ago, I think, where you can easily download websites from the net.